We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always over there, the one and only, the man with the plan, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I have no plan. I have no, plan at all, Ty. Everything's being thrown at me right now. I'm pretty good. I am speaking into a bit of an audio cave. Have you ever heard of nuggets in like the sort of foam blocks that little kids use to climb and make forts out of? Do you know about this at all?
I think I do, actually. Yeah.
I've got a couple nugget wedges on a desk, a standing desk in front of me, and a nugget square behind me. And I sound okay, right?
You do. You do. You've okay. MacGyvered a studio in whatever
right,
space
so
you're in.
The Nugget Cave so far has done pretty well. So that's the only plan I have right now. Keep nuggeting.
Keep nuggeting. That's good advice as we plot ahead amid a pandemic and uncertainty in general around the college football world. We're going to get into that here momentarily when we talk through news. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to our show out on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, anywhere you get a podcast. We're doing two shows a week until they tell us not to, frankly. So stay right here. Go out to our website, solidverbal.com, if you want to find all of our old stuff. And if you don't already, please follow along with the fun on social media. We are on Instagram. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. And oh, by the way, there is a subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com. Daniel, I will say that last show...
I know where you're going with this.
Far exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, we got a lot of reactions of I as well am old and decrepit. We
far exceeded my expectations. We have a lot of high concepts that we like to float out just amongst friends, and you never know which one's going to stick and which isn't. The
I as well am very sore all the time. Yeah. I as well understand nothing of the age of the people under 25. Yeah, we got a lot of that. So I'm glad we could relate to our audience with everything that's deteriorating inside of us and spiritually at the same time. Yeah, it was a good time.
Can I add another one real quick? Just ask if this counts.
I'm ready. Yeah.
What about calling the township to file a complaint? Is that an old and washed thing to do?
I think that's great. I think you got to be polite, but no, I mean, that sort of is in the customer feedback genus that we talked about a little bit. I do it from a positive standpoint. I don't like to call up and yell and complain.
Right.
I just like, hey, you know, Ralph was great with the delivery. But yeah, if there's something legitimate to complain about, I think a younger person might sit idly by. Whereas you're on the back nine, essentially. You're what? You're pre-40 is what I would say.
I'm pre-40, yes.
So you're approaching the back nine, so you want it to be as pleasant as possible, and you have a very specific thing that you wanted to talk about.
There's a reason that I ask you this question.
Okay.
Are you familiar with something called a bird cannon?
I could figure out what that is if we're talking literal, a cannon that shoots out birds.
It does not. I was not aware of this contraption until late last night.
Okay.
We are, as you know, pretty close to like an expanse of farmland here. Apparently.
Yeah, okay.
Apparently a bird cannon is something that the farmers use to scare away birds and like other critters from messing with their crops and animals and whatnot. I looked it up. It literally looks like a leaf blower hooked up to a 5-gallon propane tank.
So they're not shooting out.
No. It's not like a hot dog gun.
There's no projectile. Okay.
This is a literal sound cannon.
Okay. An LRAD from Whale Wars.
Correct.
Okay.
The farmers adjacent to this neighborhood have this thing going off 24 hours a day in increments of 2 minutes and 52 seconds. I don't know if there is some importance to that number within the animal kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're being overrun by Mother Nature over there or what is going on, but I am telling you, this thing sounds like Skipper the Virginia Tech cannon every single time it goes off 2 minutes and 52 seconds from now.
Oh.
I have been up since 2:30 in the morning. The neighbors are posted on Facebook. The dog doesn't know what's going on. We're under attack by the birds and the farmers and now the virus. And maybe Bob Bowlesby will talk about that in just a little bit. I need to get some damn sleep after we hit the stop button here.
Can I turn this into college football?
Please, I would love you to.
You told me about this earlier, so my bewilderment was actually fake. I knew what it was. The jig is up. But, Ty, after you told me about this, I looked up the best aerial performances by quarterbacks against college football bird teams. The literal... bird cannons of college football, if you will. Can you drop me my bird song, please? Okay. Sam Howell against Temple in the bowl. Lit them up. Lit those owls up. James Blackman against the Boston College Eagles, tie.
Yeah.
Jaren Williams, Miami, already transferred, but absolutely murdered the Louisville Cardinals. Bryce Perkins against Virginia Tech, the Hokie Birds. No longer at Virginia, but in a winning effort. Not in a winning effort. Brock Purdy lit up the Hawkeyes of Iowa, but that was in a losing effort. Alex Delton and Max Duggan, your boys at TCU against Kansas Jayhawks. Sam Ellinger against the Rice Owls. Dylan Gabriel against FAU, although he only did complete 40% of his passes, but the ones he did, amazing. Justin Fields against the Redhawks of Miami. Ian Book against the Falcons of Bowling Green, Ty. Just torched them, Ty. Was the bird cannon. Against those Falcons. Hank Bachmeier against Air Force for Boise State. Tua Tagovailoa against the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Only a couple more here. Lane Hatcher, Arkansas State, who I think is the best 2019 quarterback. Red Wolves against the Eagles of Georgia Southern. Brock Purdy, double bird tie.
Double bird cannon.
Double bird against Louisiana Monroe, the Warhawks. And finally, there's two more. The one that made me the saddest, Jaden Daniels of ASU against the Oregon Ducks, took them out of playoff contention with his aerial assault. But perhaps the most important one, Holy Cross's Connor Degenhart over the Mountain Hawks of Lehigh.
Legendary performance. We remember that one.
Huge. So those are your literal bird cannons of 2019.
We're going to need to incorporate the bird cannon into our normal fare here on.
We just have to pay attention to the. To bird teams that lose via a big passing attack.
Should we get to news?
I'd love to.
We have breaking news!
Boop, 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 boop.
This isn't so much breaking, but I saw it. It came across 2:41. It came across the wire this afternoon. Mark Emmert is, quote, concerned. Join the club, Mark, about starting fall sports.
Mm-hmm.
I read from the article here on ESPN.com, as the start of the college football season continues to inch closer, NCAA President Mark Emmert said Tuesday he remains, quote, very concerned about the status of fall sports, thinks a delayed start and shortened schedule might, quote, make sense. Again, welcome to the party, Mr. Emmert, solidverbal@gmail.com, if you'd like to give us
very troubling indeed
further comment. Moving on. Ohio State has announced that they'll be limiting their attendance to 20% inside the horseshoe. Face coverings will be required, and tailgating will be banned for the 2020 college football season. Again, the face coverings are mandatory for all fans in attendance. They're going to be physical distancing while in the stadium. Tailgating is not going to be allowed. And, oh, the traditional skull session, the pregame festivities at St. John's Arena, will not be held. Also, concessions inside Ohio Stadium will be limited as well, Dan. So, again, no big surprises there, but I think the first I've seen, Gene Smith was running weird, like, algorithms and models 2 months ago trying to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
I think he tried to aim higher than 20% when he was looking inside the matrix or whatever he was doing. But, you know, still, it feels wishful thinking-y to me, but if they can figure out a way to get 20% in the stadium, again, it holds like 100,000. So, you know, there'd be room in there to physically distance, I suppose, but didn't get anywhere close to that 20% number. I guess that would be a pretty big win for him.
Ty, did you go on your first date with Solid Wife Kate to Mexico, to a beautiful resort? Did you go to Bali?
Well, I mean, we went to Red Robin.
Red Robin, right?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in taking things incrementally. Ohio is in an okay place, not great, not amazing as a state, and this changes by the day. They do have a mandatory mask order, which is good. But to me, let's start with no fans, see how everything's going, maybe up it a little bit from there. You know, heavy fan petting, if you will, Ty.
Yep.
And see how, like, we don't need to jump into the deep end. I understand that fans and the revenue that fans can bring in, but just, we're talking about a 21,000 person gathering plus everybody there to actually play in and support the football game. So it's a lot of people gathering, Ty. It's still a big number of people gathering. I think it should be handled more incrementally. That's me.
How do you feel about these cardboard cutout fans that we got going on at baseball games?
Okay, so I don't watch a ton of baseball. I'm fine with it. It looks a little bit goofy, but 2020 is just goofy in general.
Right.
So,
like, you could pay $40 to get a Nick Cage cardboard cutout, which is so worth the money. But my question, the reason I ask is because, you know, as a business entity now, the teaming entity that we are, do we have budget to buy some select cardboard cutouts in the event that, say, you know, Texas goes fanless and you could pay $40 to get a Solid Verbal themed cardboard cutout
What's the school, the smallest school, and what I would assume to be the least expensive to mass order Ty and Dan cutouts?
Ooh.
So is it a Sun Belt team? Are we going to settle for being over the top, a streaming service stadium purchase?
Right.
Or what's the least expensive? So are we buying Kansas? Are we buying Rutgers? Rutgers not in good shape right now.
No.
What would be the best investment in terms of getting on TV and seeing a stadium full of Dans and Ties?
That's a great question.
And maybe Mama H's.
Mama
H's? I think
H's?
I would be okay
Mama
with that.
Mama H might not want that, but...
we can have her in the upper deck next to the girl sewing at Kansas.
All right. Let's think about that one. That's a good question.
Cal's pretty good.
Cal. What's the smallest Power 5 stadium?
Well, who's going to be on the Pac-12 network the most? That might be the cheapest buy. Colorado?
Colorado could be interesting.
Yeah. Carl Durrell, Colorado could get us. We could have 3,500 Dans and Ties total.
Yeah.
I would love that. I'm for it.
For like $350 maybe. That'd be awesome. All right.
I'm in.
Miami has named Derek King the starting quarterback. You'll know him from his time at Houston, where he started 22 games. Had 82 total touchdowns, 4,200, almost 4,300 passing yards, 1,400 plus rushing yards. You may recall he went with a red shirt last season and transferred to Miami in January. Only had 4 practices this spring with Miami before the pandemic. But Manny Diaz has seen enough. He's ready to name Derek King his starting quarterback.
Well, last year's starting quarterback left, and the other starting quarterbacks are not crazy interesting. So just Derek King has been good in college football. So makes sense. By the way, while you were talking about that, what is the rudest possible purchase we could make in terms of cardboard cutout. Could we get, could we buy 10 Greg Schianos and put him in the stands at Tennessee?
No, baby.
Could we get a Rick Neuheisel, Jim Mora collection in the corner of the Rose Bowl at UCLA?
This is such a Pandora's box here that we're opening right now.
It's just, what is the most subtle evil that I want everybody to let us know? Twitter, SolidVerbal, Reddit, whatever, wherever you need to, solidverbal@gmail.com. What is the most subtle evil that you think we could get through the gatekeepers?
Yeah.
In terms of a cardboard cutout at a game? Like Mike Price at Bryant-Denny?
I was going to say Mike Price is so good. It's so good. But that might be cost prohibitive.
No, I know. I mean, just one, though. Yeah, just for somebody to notice and post on
it's
Instagram.
It's like a Where's Waldo.
Right. What can we get through secretly? Because there are a lot of heads, a lot of faces that would not be appreciated in certain stadiums.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Who is the guy who killed the trees?
Oh, at Alabama?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, at Auburn specifically?
Harvey Updike?
Harvey Updike, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah, we could get some Updikes at Auburn.
Mm. All right.
Just put him in, like, just in a suit, and he's not obviously wearing the furry elephant Alabama hat. Put him in a, you know, Photoshop him into a respectable-looking suit so he looks sort of like a cleaned-up Nick Nolte.
Yeah, right.
And just get him at Jordan Hur. I'm good with it, Ty. We need to think of the most evil, but not rooted in anything seriously anti-human, but just where there's weird bad blood. I would love that.
I'm not saying this is a full podcast episode, but it's at least an extended segment.
Write it down. Put a post-it on your laptop, please.
All right. Elsewhere, as we make this turn into the weird uncertainty before us, Iowa State has replaced Iowa with Ball State on their schedule. The Big 12 is trying to play 12 games in 2020. Now, from the Iowa State standpoint, you know, they're just trying to get games in, trying to fit games in. It made sense for them. It made sense for Ball State. Ball State is currently down 3 games, not just Michigan and Indiana, but also the Maine Black Bears, which we're all looking forward to.
Of course.
A very interesting state of affairs right now around the world of college football. So the Big Ten came out first and made their announcement about conference-only games. The Pac-12 was very soon thereafter to follow. That left the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 in something of a limbo state. Now, we had talked about, I think, on our last episode, how next 2 to 3 weeks in the world of college football were going to be pretty informative about where we're headed as a season in calendar year 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds as if a decision could come as soon as Wednesday on the ACC front. Officials are meeting there. They're going to discuss their final decisions, a model and a start date for what their 2020 season might look like. The SEC has been very tight-lipped at this point, though their commissioner, Greg Sankey, has been pretty strong in just support of player safety and trying to do things responsibly. The Big 12 is almost on the far other end of the spectrum. Bob Bowlesby's like, yo, we're doing this, man. We are doing this thing. I saw some commentary from the Texas Tech president saying that other Big 12 schools generally want to play a full 12-game slate. Mm-hmm. Bob Bowlesby's on the record as part of a separate interview talking about how he doesn't necessarily think all Power 5 conferences need to do the same thing. He's fine with it being asymmetrical. So, you know, there is no czar in college football. We know that Mark Emmert maybe is somewhat of a figurehead here, but there's no true governing body that's just going to tell them all what they have to do. It's much more nuanced and complicated than that. So when we talk about how the scheduling works and the domino effect of a conference like the Big Ten announcing conference only, and where does that leave other conferences, it's very muddled. We're going to get into that with our interview today with Richard Johnson. We are. It's a good conversation.
Yeah.
But it's just so complex and painted in 50 shades of gray here. Not the 50 shades of gray, but many shades of college football gray.
Expand on that thought, please.
No, please. I'm good.
Come on. Are you chained into it? No?
I'm about as chained into this as possible. It's just, It's very weird. It's very nuanced. And honestly, it changes from second to second.
I'll offer you this. At least it seems the Big 12 is going with an aggressive plan. Whereas it seems like I don't necessarily respect it, but I can appreciate the fact that the Big 12 is like, this is our goal. This is what we want to do. We're going down swinging. I don't know. I definitely don't know if it's the right plan, but from other conferences, we're seeing sort of this dipping the toes and we're doing this. No, we're not doing this. On a certain level, I appreciate the aggression of saying we're living and dying by the three and we'll see what happens, Ty. But now there is something almost in an evil way admirable about it.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think a lot is to come. We will talk with Richard about what's going on in Major League Baseball. Part of what college football has said, just generally, is they want to learn as much as they can from some of the pro sports leagues. And I think we're seeing a very interesting case study right now. I hate to call it that because it's a health concern, but what's going on with the Miami Marlins is definitely front and center and something that I know the powers that be are paying attention to around college football.
Definitely.
So we'll see. Any other news that jumped out at you this week, Dan?
No, I have now tweeted out the question of what would be the most hilariously evil cardboard cutout purchase for an empty college football stadium. And we will collect them after our interview with Richard and decide who is the best absolute purchase.
All right. That's your news for this show, July the 29th. Shall we dive into our interview?
Let's do it.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Who is our esteemed interview subject, Mr. Rubenstein?
A dear, dear friend of the show, Richard Johnson, one of the co-authors of The Sinful Seven, a new book coming out that I'm not fully sure what it is, so I'm excited to hear what he has in the way of an explanation about a sci-fi Western that has to do with college football and the NCAA. But you've listened to him on PAPN most recently. You read him at Banner Society and SB Nation. I've watched Saturday games with him pretty much every week for the last few years. So dear, dear friend of the show, Richard Johnson.
All right, Dan, joining us now, longtime friend of the Verbal. It has been far too long. Mr. Richard Johnson, sir, welcome back to the show. How you doing, man?
Ooh, it is good to be back. The water's still fine. I miss you guys.
I miss you too. What are you doing, man? What's up?
Man, I'm in parts unknown. I have socially distanced from Brooklyn, New York for a little bit. I'm taking a load off. I'm enjoying some cool summer nights. It's as good as it can be given the circumstances of what's going on in the world.
So we're not going to divulge where your location is, parts unknown, but you may have the opportunity to practice survival skills.
Oh yeah. I can make a fire in under 3 minutes, sleep out under the stars. If a bear comes after me, I know how to disarm it and take it on. Come on now.
I saw on Bear Grylls, if you just yell, "Yo, bear," like every 30 seconds or so, that'll apparently keep him away. It scares him away.
Taught him everything he knows.
Yeah.
Old nature boy Richard Johnson. Okay, let's start here because I think we are recording this, I don't know how many hours, I can't do math, but mere dozens of hours before a book you've been working on with Alex Kirshner, Jason Kirk, and Spencer Hall called The Sinful Seven.
And Tyson Whiting. Cannot forget our buddy Tyson Whiting.
Excuse me, and Tyson Whiting, who is the chief artiste and artistic director and all around just a really talented artist, had worked with Vox and SB Nation for a long time. What is the book? How did it come together? Where can people find it? And it sounds like a Western, but it's actually a college football book. Tell me everything I need to know because I've purchased the book and I can't wait to dive in.
Okay. All right. The book is Sinful Seven, Sci-Fi Western Legends of the NCAA. It drops August 1st at noon. I am really, really excited for people to read it, man. I mean, it's been the last 3 months of your life. Look, I would not suggest to anybody who is creative listening to this podcast to write a book in the span of 11 or 12 weeks. You won't sleep much. It'll be pretty tough. And I would definitely not suggest that you write a book during a global pandemic and, you know, broader civic unrest, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But it's funny. The five of us got furloughed from Vox at the beginning of May. And it's funny, Jason Kirk, who was my college football editor at SB Nation Banner Society and is now my co-author on this book, basically like asked all of us if we wanted to do this. And Spencer Hall, being the incredible creative mind that he is, we all got on a Zoom call one day and he like laid out the idea for a college football Western. And it was one of those things where Jason kind of floated it and I didn't even know what it was going to be. I didn't even know what it could be. It was one of those things where it was like, yeah, you know, I that'll be a good use of my time over the next 3 months or so, I thought. And it's one of those things where you just start rolling. And, you know, Dan and Ty, both of you guys have worked with kind of this crew. You guys know our creative juices. You guys know how we kind of work. I have trusted these guys that I've worked with for the last 3 or 4 years implicitly, ever creatively, with my creative development. I think they are the brightest, whip smartest college football writers in the industry. And so it's not like five people were getting together to do this that didn't know each other or, you know, that were mercenary freelance writers. You know, we know how each other work. And you know, it's one of those things where during edits, you know, I had to rewrite like one of my whole chapters. And, you know, if it was a different team, like maybe I'd have some inhibitions. Maybe I wouldn't trust the editor that I'm working with. But no, like Jason asked me to do something and like, I know at the end of the day, without a shadow of a doubt, if Jason's asking me to change something, it's going to make it better. And that's just how the attitude you have to go with. And I mean, honestly, like there's some ignorance of like the process, I think, that you kind of almost have to have to do something this dumb. And by dumb, I mean, writing a book in 11 weeks.
Yep.
Like as a writer, you're always like, yeah, hell yeah. Like, you know, I'd love to write a book, right? A book's just a long article. And then you write it and you're like, this is hell. So it's one of those things where we all just put our heads down and just wrote and plowed through it. And Tyson, like the four of us are just dumb writers. Tyson Whiting is an absolutely brilliant artist. He's coding the book so it'll look sexy on your Kindle and your iPad and maybe even a PDF if that's how you want to do it. He is a brilliant creative mind in his own right. And it just is one of those projects that like it just fit. It just fits and it's really, really good. I actually read it cover to cover in its kind of final version for the first time over the weekend. And when I've read all the chapters kind of individually, but when you read it kind of as a collective work in one or two sittings, you know, you view it a little bit differently. And I got done with it. And I literally was like, it's not just because I'm working on this that I say this, like the book is good. And I cannot wait for people to read it. And you can go pick it up. Sinful7.com, pre-order until Saturday, and 20% of the pre-orders will go, the profits of the pre-orders will go to Feeding America. So you're helping some people in need as well as helping some fun college football minds.
So when you say sci-fi or Western legends of the NCAA, what does that mean? Is that Brian Bosworth? Are these fictional characters? What do we...
Is there a narrative? Yeah,
how does college football fit into sci-fi Western legendary?
So we basically like take the... So also the rhythm of the book is half fiction, half nonfiction. So for most of the book, it alternates between a fiction chapter and a nonfiction chapter. If you've read the excerpt that Spencer Hall wrote, that went on ForTheWin.com last week, you'll read a fiction part. By the time your people are listening to this, you can go and read one of my excerpted chapters on Hazlitt.net, and that is a nonfiction chapter. And so you'll get it is a truly unique project because of that. And so basically, we are telling and creating a fictional world with and populating that world with characters, stories, locales from real college football stories that span from basically the beginning of college sports right around the 1990s. And there are things that are on the cutting room floor that we couldn't even put in. I mean, you guys know that the sport is so rich with characters that are 100% real people that if you took to a Hollywood screenwriter and said, this is an idea for a fleshed out character, they would say, no, this is too fanciful. I mean, the sport's insane. We know it. That's why we love it.
You mean like a coach coaching from a hospital bed?
Yeah, there are things like that that you just sit down and you say like, this cannot be real life. Like these people cannot be actual people. And yet some of them, coaching and administrators, like they get entrusted with 18 to 22 year olds at a time, 100 of them at a time. Like it boggles the mind truly. But the game is so rich with stories and we take and we tweak and we adapt and we try to fit in to this fictional universe, what we can, but there are references galore to college football in here, both in a sci-fi realm and a Western realm. I mean, somebody is going to be silly enough to try to do a wiki on this book. And I feel for that person because that person is going to have some work to do.
It feels to me a little bit like Truman Show, where you've built your own like fictional bubble. You've pulled in elements from the outside world to construct that new reality. How are you treating the postseason? Can we just ask? Because Dan and I were always at odds with, the bowl season or the playoffs. However,
is that a character?
Yeah. Like how is that a topic that is broached in your so-called Western bubble here?
Oh, I will say that it is more than broached. That is, I can say that. I can say that it is more than broached, the postseason of both college football and college basketball, might I add.
Okay.
So it's in there. Trust me, you're gonna get your fill of college sports postseason. I will say that. I'll keep it cryptic.
But if it's cryptic and Western, you're gonna do something cool like a duel. That would be way cooler if we had it in real life, and far more ghastly. But at the same time, definitely fits with the motif here of Western legends.
I will neither confirm or deny, Tyler.
Okay, fair enough.
I'll neither confirm or deny that Notre Dame has a prominent role in this book.
Wow. Cam McDaniel, supporting character, Ty. Supporting character. Not often used running back whose helmet sometimes fell off. Okay, I'm going to do a professional segue here, unless there's anything we need to add further, and we'll talk about it at the end of this whole thing. But speaking of science fiction and the Wild Wild West, Richard, we've got a possible 2020 college football season. I haven't seen you in months, and that's far too long, so I haven't been able to get your extensive thoughts on things. But one of the things Ty and I were recently talking about is the fact that we are so hyper-focused on a very binary question of will they, won't they, and slash how, that we don't think about all of the potential ramifications of the different scenarios. We've talked about different schedule ramifications, but just more on a human level, whether it's players or coaches or scheduling or TV or the sport itself. Do you have any big thoughts, things that have just sort of crawled into the back of your brain when you're not writing the book about what people perhaps aren't thinking about considering the circumstances of what the 2020 college football season might look like?
I think on the top, people ask me, like, do you know? And I'm like, no. And I don't know because the people I talk to don't know. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. And like, there are some things that you can speak to with like relative certainty and confidence. But when I tell you guys, this is the blind leading the blind, and I'm talking all the way up to like school presidents, conference commissioners, all that kind of stuff. I mean, when you talk to people in the industry, coaches, agents, whatever, like everybody's like, what the hell is going on? Like nobody knows what's going on. Like if you've seen the college football Reddit matrix that shows like what conferences and leagues like are playing and what, and which ones aren't and like who's canceled. Like I actually had a coach DM me on Twitter yesterday. He DM'd me that picture and it literally says, and I quote, what the F are we doing here? Like nobody knows what's going on. And that is the thing that before I tell anybody, you know, my opinions on things, I have to preface that. Like it could change in a week. And there's so many things in this world right now that you can say that about, but college football is what we're talking about. So yeah, it can change in a week. You know, the one thing that I think I can talk about with a pretty big amount of certainty is that the spring thing is probably a non-starter, at least for the Power Five leagues. And it's because, honestly, it's because of the NFL. Like the NFL is not, I don't know if the NFL is going to finish its season, but I will say I'm pretty sure they're going to try to kick it off Labor Day weekend. And because of that, I don't think the NFL is going to push. I don't think the NFL is going to try to push the combine back. I don't think the NFL is going to push the draft back. And so what you may run into is Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. If you were playing in the spring, for instance, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields getting paid a lot by an agency to sit out. And then the agency gets the money on the back end when they get drafted and get their signing bonus or something like that of that nature. If I'm Trevor or Justin, God bless Clemson or Ohio State, but I got a lot of money riding on me not tearing an ACL February 5th and potentially jeopardizing my 2021 regular season in the NFL. So that I think is the big thing with spring. I don't personally view spring. I personally view spring as something of a non-starter, at least for the Power Five league.
So that's, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would say to the Power Five, I'm like, look, the Power Five leagues, the commissioners need to get together like the five families in the Godfather movies, right? Get together and just say, look, this is how we're going to do testing. This is how we're going to do that. The NCAA has already said, is on record saying basically it's y'all's problem. The NCAA is not going to put a foot down and regulate this and all this kind of stuff. And that's because the NCAA is what the NCAA is. And by the way, you can read about the NCAA's formation in the Central 7 Sci-Fi Western Legends of the NCAA dropping August 1st at noon, central7.com. No, but it's just one of those things where it's like the NCAA is not going to force a hand here. So it's going to be up to the leagues. And it's so piecemeal. Like Michigan State, all the entire team's quarantining. Rutgers, the entire team's quarantining. But then maybe another team has a few cases and the whole team doesn't quarantine, but you quarantine a position group or something like that. Like it's like whack-a-mole, man. It's like, okay, here's one problem. We've solved it. Okay, here's another one. It's okay, we're going to have 20% fans in the stands. Well, we're not going to have tailgating. So who's going to come? It's not going to be students, right? Like, is it going to be kids' parents? Like, is it going to be boosters? You go on and on and on and you spiral. And that's just me talking as some dummy who's not a conference commissioner. Like, I can only imagine the levers and what is going on in some of these conference offices, man. It's crazy.
So let me play devil's advocate. We talk about the NFL, and we don't know if they're going to finish the season. Given current events, we don't know if the Marlins are going to finish the week. Okay, so to your point, there's a lot going on. But I think you're right about the spring thing, to the extent that if the goal is to win a championship, then losing Trevor Lawrence, losing Justin Fields, losing some of these elite caliber players is certainly a consideration and a problem. I question whether or not that's the goal here, right? Because
it's what I've been saying all along, Ty.
You know, and Dan, sure, let's harken back to your age-old point here. Yeah. If that's the goal, then fine. But if the goal, as I understand it, is to just play as many games as possible, to earn as many bucks as possible so that schools and programs don't go under, wouldn't the cost of, you know, playing three games in the fall and then having to suspend the whole damn thing be far greater than saying, you know what, this isn't going to work. There isn't going to be a championship, at least in its normal sense anyway. Why don't we just push it off to the spring? The cost of doing business in this sense will be that we lose some of our elite players, but at least maybe we know we can get 10 games in.
Well, the problem is with the other problem with spring is that with a lot of these programs, you run into other sports. So I went to the University of Florida, right? A very big, very robust athletic department. And a lot of I'm talking about like SIDs and stuff like that. A lot of the, it's football is kind of like all hands on deck for the athletic departments, because in the fall at a lot of these places, it's only really like football, volleyball, maybe soccer. And then in the winter, obviously basketball starts and then like wrestling and stuff. But for the most part, there's not that many sports. But when you get to the spring, there are so many sports that are going on. It's one of those things where you may end up just running everything together, and you may overly tax these athletic departments who don't have the resources for everybody to do, you know, six games on a Saturday, one of which being football. And, you know, this is obviously like a minor thing, because maybe we won't have fans in a potential spring 2021, but like, how do you get a campus mobilized to hold those events? Now, if there's not fans, again, different story, but those are just some of the contingencies that are the collateral damage maybe that you may think of about moving the games to the spring. I hesitate to say the word easy, but, you know, conference-only schedules, maybe eight games, because that gives you the opportunity to cancel a week, sit out a week if you've got a lot of positive tests or whatever. And I know that I don't want to sit here and sound like I'm playing around with a very serious public health matter right now, but if we want to be pragmatic, Machiavellian, whatever, at some point, somebody's going to say the quiet part out loud here, which is that we've just got to play football to undergird the economics of college athletics, because they are so fundamentally warped.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
Yeah. The other thing that I wonder, and I mentioned this to Dan, you know, now there's news coming out, and I don't know how significant it is, how seriously I should take it. I think we're all in the same boat when it comes to things like vaccine development, right? Like we do a college football show. We'll leave that to the experts. But if in fact we do have some sort of vaccine developed by the end of the year, could that be something of a tipping point? Knowing that so much of this revenue on the college end does come from putting fans in seats, might that give them some further clearance to say, you know what, maybe spring does make more sense?
Depends. It just depends on like a mass production schedule. It depends on, there are already kind of early signs right now that trials are doing well in the early stages right now with some of these vaccines.
Yeah.
I read today that Texas A&M, I think, is getting a grant to help with production, mass production or something like that. So the wheels are turning there. It definitely would, but you know, I don't know if the leagues are going to sit here and say we can wait that long, because I don't know if they can. We kind of keep it on the team level because, you know, that's what pertains to us or whatever, but I don't think the problem or the I don't think the biggest red flag is these teams being amongst themselves. It's the fact that college kids are going to go out to parties. They're mm-hmm. going to go out to bars. They're going to hang out with their friends. They're going to hang out with their significant others. That's where we talk about. That's where real spread occurs, right, particularly in the southern states where it's really popping off right now. But then the other thing that may rear its ugly head is, well, what happens if me, Dan, and Ty, where all three of us live, what happens if the Northeast does a second wave in October? You know, who knows, man? I don't know. You know, I love college football. You know, we all do. We all rely on it for our livelihoods. But there is a lot up in the air, and it changes every day. And it's just, who knows, man? Who knows?
One of the things I want to get back to, you mentioned something about like the five families, the five power five conferences getting together and discussing things and figuring out where they stand apart from the NCAA. I'm wondering if we could see a situation, and I've only heard about this recently, sometimes, and these are generally older people, they'll go in for a medical procedure, like they'll get something worked on, like they'll get a broken nose fixed, and they'll say, hey, while you're in there, why not fix my eyes a little bit? Why not give me a little bit of a facelift? Why not, you know, give me some lipo, because I'm going to be recovering anyway and nobody's going to know the difference. They're just going to say, wow, you look great after all that time off. Could this be a situation, if we have a shortened, if we have a canceled, if we have an altered season in some way, that the powers that be it, you know, TV and conference commissioners and everybody getting together saying, let's use this opportunity, this time off, for an almost restructuring to sort of centralize power in a now national sport, whereas, you know, we have all this separated and disparate power because it used to be a regional sport. Now it's a lot more nationalized because of TV. Could we see a situation in which they use this recovery time to, I guess, become more efficient in terms of how the sport is structured?
I do wonder. I mean, that now that appeals to the better angels of the nature of college administrators. And that would take some of them ceding power, and we all know that ain't gonna happen. You know, I one of the things that I was batting around with somebody is, do we think that this could be a thing where Power Five, like out and out, really breaks off? I mean, they already have so much autonomy to set rules as they want given the NCAA rule book, but would this be a thing where they really truly break off and just really say, you know, kick rocks to the rest of college sports? I don't think that's going to happen, primarily because leaving the NCAA, doing something that drastic would leave NCAA tournament TV money on the table. And obviously nobody's going to do that. So I don't think it'll get that drastic. I don't think it'll get that bad. The economic fallout, as we know, is absolutely going to be felt by the group of five schools and by the FCS schools. And, you know, all the way down, it trickles down, the shit rolls downhill, as we know. And, you know, I look at the Big Ten cancels its out of conference games. And a lot of people kind of within college sports outside of the Big Ten were kind of like, why'd you go so early? Why didn't you hold out a few more weeks to kind of say something? Obviously, we've seen the Pac-12 has also moved. But at the time when the Big Ten made its call, I guess the weekend after the 4th, a lot of people were like, why didn't you wait? Why didn't you just hold? You know, you could have waited to make that announcement. And so, you know, the Big Ten says that. And so I take a school like Bowling Green, right? Bowling Green's got, what, two, I think, Big Ten games on its schedule against Illinois and Ohio State. And so I think about a school like Bowling Green. Maybe that's $2.5 million in guaranteed revenue that they were going to get from those two games that is now no longer there. And, you know, I think Bowling Green's revenues last year was something like $20 or $25 million. Like that 2.5, man, like that's something there, man. That is a decent chunk of money that if you're Bowling Green, you were counting on. So what do you do? Do you sue Ohio State to try to claw back some of that money? Well, you probably can't fight Ohio State in court because they'll just sit on the ball. But the other thing is that Ohio State spent 80 years not playing anybody in Ohio, and they've only recently come around in the new millennium. And it's really good for everybody because it's a symbiotic relationship, and Bowling Green players get, and fans get to take a cool trip to Columbus, and they get to say they played in the Shoe, and it's an in-state thing and all that kind of stuff. So maybe you don't want to piss Ohio State off. So you're going to have to settle for less than the $1.2, $1.5 million guarantee. And so maybe you leave as much as $1 million on the table. And Ohio State says, we'll play you again in 2026 or whatever in a settlement. Like, this is when I talk about the shit rolling downhill, like, that's what I'm talking about. That's kind of how this works. And there are going to be hundreds of those type of decisions and calculuses and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure some of these games have insurance clauses and act of God clauses and stuff like that for something like this, but then other games won't. And so, you know, we know the bifurcated nature of this sport where, you know, 120 major college football teams are not playing on the same playing field. And that doesn't even get near FCS, get near HBCUs, get near D3, all that stuff.
What I'm curious about is how much maybe, and especially when as it relates to players, but I guess somewhat with coaches and coaches' families, how much you've thought about geography. We've seen stories about, you know, recruits potentially staying closer to home, not necessarily because, you know, they're scared of travel or their families are scared of travel. We're also in pretty dark economic times. It's going to be it is expensive to travel across the country, somewhat across the country, pay for hotels, maybe a rental car, meals. That's an expense that has become even more difficult as the economy has taken a pretty significant hit. What do you think about, and I just mentioned the word national and nationalized, what do you think about the sport becoming almost more regional because of the realities economically and public health wise of the current world?
Yeah, I almost wonder if it becomes a thing where the top, you know, upper crust of Power Five, the upper 30, 40, where they actually end up maybe playing each other even more in some of these out of conference bonanza games, right? Like, you know, Florida for my dear alma mater for something like 30 years didn't play an out-of-state, out-of-conference game. And right. Then Jerry Jones said, hey, we'll give you $6 million to come play Michigan. And so Florida went and played Michigan a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So, I, you know, we know that those games have been happening more and more in the last couple of years. I wonder if that is something that we see an even more increase on. But then you think about, yes, the collateral that you're talking about, you know, can mom and dad fly from California to watch Johnny offensive lineman play in Lambeau Field? To watch, you know, can they do that? And so, yeah, that's where we talk about people getting left out in the cold. But then on a regional level, I do wonder if it sort of forces kind of that belt tightening and things of that nature. You know, if that's something where that starts to affect the upper crust of Power Five and the upper crust of college football, maybe we end up going back to, you know, Florida doesn't ever leave the state, or, you know, USC doesn't barnstorm. And I think, you know, you lose some of, you know, Florida State built its brand, right, on we'll play anybody, any place, anywhere, anytime, when they were an independent before the ACC. And we love these intersectional games. And I do wonder if those end up going on the chopping block because of just realities of the situation. You know, I don't know how much the NCAA could potentially step in to kick in there. I know the NCAA pays parents' ways for at least the Final Four, if not all of them, the NCAA men's basketball tournament. You know, I don't know if the NCAA steps up more to do that with college basketball. I don't know their jurisdiction in football to even do that. That probably comes from the conferences. But then we go back to, if the conferences are losing television money, then the conferences don't have that much money to potentially dole out and give. So it's all this systemic symbiosis and everything's intertwined and all this kind of stuff. And then you inject a global pandemic and everything is up for grabs.
Richard, I know you're a youth. You are young. You are in tune more than Ty and I are, as washed as we are. You are much better in tuned with people who are college aged, I would say, because you just happen to be cooler and younger. Does Instagram have the server room and capability to handle the sheer number of DMs
that will be going on because people are going out less and they need to find someone on Friday or Saturday night on a college campus?
Oh, it's, I mean, the sliding has already begun. I hope that Tinder, Bumble, Grindr, whatever, I hope that those servers are ready for what is going to go on when students return to college campuses. And, you know, we talk about community spread and all that kind of stuff and where the virus actually spreads. That is, that's what we're talking about.
Also, social media snitching is going to be a thing. We're going to start seeing, we're going to see Instagram stories, and there's going to be a player, an outside linebacker at Minnesota, a corner from Texas A&M that is supposedly trying to quarantine between games, and all of a sudden they're out at a house party, they're out at a bar outside or something like that. The first social media snitch situation, we've already had it with the NBA and Lou Williams going for wings in Atlanta. It's a certainty, right? It's an absolute 100% lock to happen.
You are going to find there are going to be some truly asinine reasons why some player ends up contracting the virus. I mean, I'm not sure if we know when the first Marlin caught it, but I am waiting to find out that it is just the dumbest reason why a Miami Marlins player risked his health and the health of his family and or his teammates to do whatever activity it is that he deemed necessary to do in the epicenter of coronavirus in the United States of America currently, which is Florida. So, you know, I don't know how there is no bounds to the ingenuity of how coronavirus, unfortunately, may spread amongst college football players and college students this fall when students return to campus.
You know what I struggle with in thinking about the season and obviously the complexities and the strange stories that we'll no doubt be discussing here. This is a very serious situation. It's a public health crisis. As you said, Richard, we're trying to squash this virus as best we can. We all have a rooting interest. We want college football to be played, but I think you're right to say that there are going to be some really like just asinine stories that come up. I struggle with how much light I am allowed to make of some of these stories, you know, because on one hand, it's like, this is a serious thing. You don't want people to get sick. On the other, that's so much of what we've done over the last decade here on the show. I'm still kind of struggling with how to walk that balance.
I sincerely hope that Lou Williams and Jack Harlow are healthy and that the ladies that they were cavorting with last week are healthy and that the wings were good, because I need to be able to make fun of the fact that a professional basketball player left Disney to go to a strip club on an off day when he was supposed to be quarantined. I mean, come on. But if anybody's sick, we don't want to make fun of it. You're right, Ty.
It's
we don't want to make light of it.
It's just such such a tentative balance. And, you know, I mean, I hope that's not the wrong thing to ask, but it really does weigh on me when we log on to do this show every week. Like, wow, this is a really delicate situation.
Approaching it from a life perspective. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I just like some of the ways that I've read somebody in New Jersey, there was like a 700 person mansion party that got busted. And I don't know if you heard about Dan on Long Island. There was like a chain smokers concert.
Yeah, saw that.
That Goldman Sachs' CEO DJ. I was like, what are we doing? What?
Supposedly it was supposed to be a car only concert, but then people got out of their cars. Who could have seen that coming?
I don't know, man.
A couple of other, I think, ramifications or just stories that I think are going to be interesting to follow is we're pretty sure the coaching salary bubble has popped now, right?
Man,
Mel Tucker just was the big last winner of the coaching salary bubble.
Yeah, congratulations. I hope the check clears for Mel Tucker. Is the bubble going to burst? I don't know. I think what'll happen is it'll be more assistant salaries that you may see go or get chipped away. And I should say, if you do see coaching salaries go down, it may be because a coach is trying to balance and say, I'd rather have that money in my assistant pool anyway, because that's what, like, as you know, Alabama kind of led the charge with 45 analysts on the sideline. You know, if you're trying to keep up with the Joneses in that way, which is what you have to do to compete for a national championship in this sport, you know, the money's got to come from somewhere. But then I look at, you know, if it's coming from these boosters, what's going to happen with when these boosters are potentially seeing their own businesses unfortunately dry up because of the coronavirus and its impact on the economy in whatever sector it is that may be happening. You know, we all joke about what's going to happen to Texas A&M if the oil industry dries up. But, you know, it's serious. You know, think about a school like – I think about a school like FAU, right? FAU's got a whole bunch of its athletic department budget that's wrapped up in student fees. Well, what happens if there aren't any students on campus or if there are dramatically less students enrolled in the university for a semester? And then FAU goes to the state of Florida and says, we need some extra funds. And the state of Florida says, sorry, we ain't got it like that because we're trying to battle a global pandemic. You know, what happens then? It's just, there's a lot to think about the economics of the country in general. You can't just dip into an endowment like it's a savings account to save your university, you know, or to save your athletic program. If you could do that, Stanford would not have cut so many sports the other day.
By the way, could have a lot more Clay Helton situations across the country. Teams unwilling to fire a coach they want to fire because they have no intent of paying a buyout. They're like
buyout agents that negotiated the thick buyouts. That is the one thing that I will say. I thought the buyout bubble was basically going to bust anyway, because we just can't keep going on like this. As far as the economics of the coaching industry, you just cannot keep doing this with buyouts. So I think more than anything, like, that may be another way where you see the economics pretty drastically change. Because when I'm a school, I'm like, yeah, like, can't do a buyout, can't do a deal with that type of buyout in there.
By the way, a Jimbo Fisher checkout at Texas A&M, knowing how much money he's owed, if he just decides that, like, you know what, I'm good, and he just pulls a full Office Space, a full Peter from Office Space in College Station, where he just guts a fish at his desk in his office because he knows they're not going to fire him. Holy hell. And I know that people are in the back of the mind thinking, as we did at Florida State, right? But it's very real that a coach could full on check out knowing they're not buying him out.
Yeah. I also wonder what happens where, like, if we see more David Beatty situations, right?
Yeah.
Where the school says, hey, we need it back, and we're going to manufacture an NCAA violation to try to get it back.
Clay Helton might be there forever in this new economy.
Build him a statue, man. Build him a statue. Finesse God.
Once again, Richard Johnson, one of the co-authors with Spencer Hall, Jason Kirk, Alex Kirshner, and Tyson Whiting of The Sinful Seven, available August 1st, noon Eastern. Is that what the time zone?
High noon.
Noon Eastern, baby. High noon.
Noon Eastern.
Recently, you've heard, obviously, Richard on PAPN. You saw him at Banner Society, SB Nation, Vox Media. I don't think Richard's going to be a free agent for very long. So we're very excited to hopefully sooner rather than later figure out what's happening in sports media and college football media, because as we all know, Richard Johnson, rising star. Richard, thank you very much for your time. Sinful7.com.
Always a pleasure, boys. Sinful7.com.
Take care, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Good conversation again, our good friend Richard Johnson. Please go out and buy that book, Sinful 7. Looks very interesting. You said you did buy it. I bought mine.
Oh, I bought it a long time ago. I pre-ordered. I'm excited to take a full gander.
Absolutely. Looks exciting, and a lot of creative people working on that. So
yes,
doing what I can to support them. It feels good, especially in this weird time, right?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, the responses are rolling in about the most hilariously evil cardboard cutout purchase for an empty stadium. I don't know if we'll fully do it today go through all of them, but Urban Meyer at Michigan was an early one. And the Surrender Cobra Kid at Michigan during the I think it was the Michigan State punt at the end of the game. That one has been offered out, but we're getting a lot of really good responses. The popcorn guy from Wazoo to get his presence back in the stadium at Martin Stadium, I think would be a big, big win. I think that would get through the censors.
That
I think
cut
he
through.
Specifically would. Yes.
This definitely has a game day signed feel to it where you need to be clever enough to beat the censors.
Right.
But at the same time, not too esoteric that folks aren't going to know what the heck you're talking about.
Like Lane Kiffin's not getting through the censors in Knoxville.
No.
Right. That is like one of the obvious. Harvey Updike, if you dress him up and it seems more respectable, perhaps. Man, there's so many, especially players who have been told, like if you had like a Tavon Austin cutout in the stands at Norman, I think they lost that game, West Virginia to Oklahoma, when he had the huge game.
Here we go. Chris Davis in one of the Alabama end zones.
Oh yeah. Kick six.
That would be something.
So many good responses.
All right.
We'll review these next time.
Yeah. Thank you again for spending some of your time with us. We, as always, thank our esteemed guest, Mr. Richard Johnson, for stopping by. Great conversation. Good to hear from him. We'll bring him back soon, we promise. We would encourage everyone to subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. We are at solidverbal.com. You can find all the links there, but subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, you name it, Overcast, all of these hotspots that we've talked about over the years. And if you like the show, please do give us a 5-star review. We promise that stuff helps. We are trying to reach out to as many college football fans as humanly possible, doing the show that we love to do. Twice a week. We will continue to do twice a week until they tell us we shouldn't do that anymore, or until we get crushing season news. Who knows? But we have every plan to continue on our current trajectory.
Wes Byram, the Auburn kicker who chomped the Gators, get him at the Swamp. No.
Oh no.
There's a lot of good ones.
These are cold blooded.
Oh man, Lovey with his beard in Camp Randall. That'd be great.
That would be great in any stadium, frankly.
Case McCoy at Kyle Field, the last Texas quarterback to beat A&M, was a response from Danny.
That
I love
beard is a national treasure. We need to bring that back.
Yeah, he can. You know what? If you can grow a beard like that, then I don't think it's going to take that long. He can bring it back 100%.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thanks again so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home, and your support, all that stuff that's... It's great. We appreciate it. We hope you're all doing well. We will talk to you all in a few days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace. Okay.